And we hope that y'all take our advice and try to find forms of mindfulness for yourselves so that you can be okay despite the trials and tribulations that are going on in our community and in our nation and in our world. You'll be okay. Just take care of yourself first, okay?
Yeah.
All right, y'all. Have a good evening. This is KBOO 90.7, and up next is The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tune in.
Friends, this is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. Do not worry about the sound of my voice. Yes, I have laryngitis. I was one of those terrible people at the airport today, complaining and screaming about the workers, as I do. The federal shutdown means that many airport workers across the country are being forced to work with no money. They call this a furlough. I call it thievery, but, you know, tomato, tomato. So I'm very lucky today to be speaking to people about the fight against bids. And I will let them tell you what a bid is and why, instead of bids, we should be fighting for compassionate change districts. So, I will let you all introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about your work and how you relate to it so that our listeners can know and love you as I do. Thank you. You go first, please.
My name is Benjamin, and I am a member of Right to Survive and the Western Regional Advocacy Project. I've been working on homeless issues for about 7 years and have And I don't like business improvement districts because multitude of reasons, which we'll get into.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Allison Lirish Dean. I am the founder and the host and the producer of a podcast called Ear to the Pavement. It's a podcast about progressive political movements and ideas. I I guess my biggest claim to fame is I researched and produced a film called My Brooklyn that came out in 2012, and it's about the gentrification of downtown Brooklyn, where there was a giant business improvement district. They called it a bid on steroids. It was actually a combination of three different bids that got together and had like this really concentrated amount of power. And so that's kind of where I cut my teeth on learning about bids. Yeah, I guess that's.
Thank you. Shout out to Brooklyn. The Fulton Mall is disgusting. And everything that you've let happen to what used to be a vibrant neighborhood of mostly West Indian people are now a bunch of white gentrifiers who call the police at the slightest fright.
I love how you turn that narrative, because that's what all the gentrifiers say. The Fulton Mall is disgusting. We need to clean it up.
It's disgusting because of you.
Right.
But anyway, go on.
Hi, I'm Sandra Amolo, and I am the interim executive director at VOS, Workers' Rights Education Project. And I am here representing day laborers, informal workers, temporary laborers who stand to benefit from the Compassionate Change District. My background is in organizing, working with communities of color, seeking democratic processes, empowering our communities. So I'm excited to talk about the opportunities that are there. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so I want to break it down, being that we have to talk about what we're against, right? Why we're against it, and then we'll go into what we're fighting for, right? But we need to give the right context. So bids, if you want to talk a little bit about how they come about, why they're significant, and why we should fight against them. Business improvement districts, please.
Sure. I mean, business improvement districts, in a business improvement district, the property owners are assessed a tax that then gets pooled. The money from that gets pooled, and the money is used to do things like collect garbage and clean up the neighborhood and put up sometimes, you know, holiday decorations, or take care of things that we think of normally as just typical city services. And so that's kind of just a snapshot of what they are. In terms of the big picture, you know, what people really need to know about bids in the big picture. First of all, bids are really now the norm. They're entirely the norm all over the country when it comes to getting development done. And that's why I think it's so important to zoom out and really look at, like, where did they come from? What kind of political animal are these things? Because they're so normalized that many people just, they're so built into the fabric of the everyday life of the city that I think a lot of people don't take the time to say, wait a minute, you know, is this really the only way things can get done? So for a little bit of that context, bids have been around since the 1960s. They really grew out of, I think a good way of thinking of them is that they grew out of this larger project of neoliberalism. And I know that word gets kind of batted around a lot, so I kind of want to just explain what I mean by that. And I really like the way that David Harvey, who's a radical geographer, talks about neoliberalism, which is that it was a political project that really originated in the 1970s. And the point of it was to reorganize the economy in such a way as to restore power to an ailing capitalist class. So by that, I mean like bankers, heads of large corporations, the Rockefellers.
They have it so bad.
People like that. of course, that was also a time when there was a lot of disinvestment in cities. And so you can think of it as like, well, they were just trying to come together and figure out how to solve this problem of, you know, disinvestment in cities. But I like that framing of it as this ailing capitalist class kind of coming up back and saying, hey, wait a minute, the labor movement has gotten really strong. The environmental movement has gotten really strong. We've got the EPA now, something we've never had before. Mm-hmm. We have the feminist movement. We have the civil rights movement. We have all these things. And we're just sort of like on the sidelines now. So what are we going to do about it, mm-hmm. right? And so this neoliberal project was really a project to restore their own economic and social power and control. which had really been curtailed by all these things, the New Deal and the Great Society and all that. So I think this part of that project, BIDS, really fit into that larger project. It was really a larger project of doing these public-private partnerships, which are everywhere. A BID is basically a type of public-private partnership. I think that one of the best ways of thinking about this neoliberal project is that if you're faced with a choice between bailing out the people or bailing out, for instance, the banks, you always help the banks and you leave the people to struggle. And I think
who is you?
I think that, well, I think government. The people in power. Okay. The choice. If the people in power are faced with the choice of helping the people versus helping the banks, for example, an example of the capitalist class.
Yeah.
I think that the choice is always, well, of course, we're going to help the banks.
Why?
Right? Well, because that's how you restore power to this capitalist class of people.
Oh, okay.
You know, if you can keep any kind of self-determination from taking hold, and I think that's what, you know, the CCD is really about. It's about how can we have a district that's about people who are normally marginalized from the political process actually having some self-determination in this situation. Mm-hmm. So BIDS are like a plant that's nurtured in that soil that I just described, if that makes any sense. And you kind of see that principle operating, I think, in everything today. I mean, think about healthcare, think about education. This idea of like, we don't help the people, we help the powerful, or we help the people with money, or we help, you know, that's, I think, really an operative principle. And one of the chilling effects of this shift, I think, is that inside of the neoliberal project, I think a needy citizen is not a good citizen. Mm-hmm. I think a good citizen is someone who doesn't need anything, who doesn't need help, who isn't in any way struggling. So we can talk more about BIDS, but I believe, as far as I've seen on my work with my work on the ground with community organizations fighting BIDS, that this is, BIDS really view their mandate as cleansing urban space of citizens who actually need help, who are poor, who interfere in their minds with making the space as attractive as possible for outside investment. They would never say that publicly,
right?
But I totally think that when you look at the evidence, when you look at how they operate globally, that's really kind of the sort of trend.
Excellent.
That was a lot.
No, I needed all of it.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because what I don't want to do is assume that people who are listening are already convinced that BIDS, the people who write them, people who enact them, the very project of neoliberalism, the idea of cleansing space, urban renewal, all of these buzzwords. I really don't want to assume that everyone who's listening feels like we do and thinks that this is something that should be struggled against and maybe is on the fence. And there are people who I'm sure would consider themselves to be decent human beings that care about human rights, yet they'll tell you in a minute, I think it's good. The streets are cleaner.
Well, and the truth is, and it has to be said, that at least in New York City, where I witnessed for over a decade the process of BIDS really transforming spaces, that the spaces that they operate in are really appealing to a lot of people. I mean, if you think about, I don't know, you know, if listeners might be famous, might be familiar with Union Square, for example, in New York City, which is a famous historic public space where lots of historic protests have taken place, you know, over many, many decades. And, you know, that's a space where there's now Whole Foods. It's really beautiful. There's lots of amazing restaurants. But, like, the crackdown on the right to publicly assemble mm-hmm. is really intense. It's extremely invisible. You go there, you're like, who could have a problem with this? There's, you know, all kinds of, like, things happening there. But it's very controlled. It's highly surveilled.
Yeah.
You know, certain people might go there and feel totally comfortable, and many other people might go there and feel completely uncomfortable,
right.
You know, and it's really all about who you are and what you're, I mean, if you're there to consume, if you're there to participate in the sort of consumption going on there and you have money and you can pay sort of to be there, then that's, you know, one thing. But anyway, we can talk more about that later.
Yeah,
but.
I hope we do. So those are my stomping grounds, actually. And I am 32, and I started to go around the village when I was like 16. It is an absolutely different place. And if I may, I would like to bring in the racial component here, particularly around how business improvement districts, urban renewal go hand in hand with policing, right? So think about stop and frisk in New York City. If police officers or any law enforcement agency is not reaching their quota, and of course they'll tell you all day long you don't have quotas, but more and more is getting revealed all the time. Look at the NYPD 12, right? People should know about that. Maybe we'll be able to get into that later, where officers of color, no heroes, whatever. But they're talking about the fact that there are quotas, and that one of the best ways that you can get a quota is to go to a neighborhood like Union Square where there are a lot of people and just find the black and brown kids and just snatch them up. And you run them and you'll find one of them that has a bag of weed and now you're good to go. and we know that, right? So we might not even go. You might want to stay out of that neighborhood, actually. And so it begins. So I was hoping that we could bring in a little bit of how racial profiling plays into the larger project of BIDS.
Yeah, and I think what Allison is touching on is the fact that BIDS create exclusion, and BIDS make it hard for the folks who are invisible to be seen and to be valued in the communities where they're created. And that's something for us that's a huge concern, is that we want to be involved in the process and we want to determine how our communities look like. We want our communities to be multicultural and vibrant, and a clean and safe Portland means that we're eradicating all the culture, all the vibrancy that is in our communities. And I don't think that's anything that anyone should stand for. We also see that, you know, this is another way to criminalize homelessness and to sweep under the rug the root causes of homelessness, which is housing, you know, and the lack of economic opportunity. And I think this is just a Band-Aid to a much, much larger problem. And without addressing the root cause, we're not really going to get to the heart of what's going on in our city and in our nation in general. I think what we're most excited about is an opportunity with a Compassionate Change District to put the people first, right? To put the people who are most vulnerable and affected by these policies at the forefront in deciding what kind of communities, what kind of neighborhoods that they would like to see, and how they would like to contribute as neighbors, and not seeing them as nuisances or as problems, but individuals who can actively advocate for themselves, be empowered, be determined to make a difference. And so I think that that's one thing. And I think it's another thing to also say that, you know, policing is an aspect, is a key aspect in BIDS, yes. Whether it's armed or unarmed, you know,
private,
it's
private or public.
Private or right. public, mm-hmm. you know, it's advocating for more police on the streets who are doing beats that are focused on finding the people who don't fit in, finding the people who don't look like business professionals, mm-hmm. questioning them, harassing them, surveilling them, mm-hmm. collecting their information. Yes. And to be honest, we see that happening in our communities right now. Yeah. You know, we talk about instances where the people that we serve are dealing with police who are asking for their information and asking them why they're where they are, you know, or people being woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yes. And you're, this is, you know, you have, you're struggling with mental health issues, you're struggling with other things, and you get caught up in the wave of what's happening with a police officer or an individual waking you up in the middle of the night and asking you to move. And so I think that there's constructive ways for us to solve these problems, and they're in our hands, you know, and I think that there's an opportunity for us to work together and collaborate. This doesn't mean that business doesn't have to be involved in the making of the solutions. I think what the coalition, the Human Bill of Rights and the RAP Coalition have done is to open up a space and a conversation and say, we're willing to work together to find something that's mutually beneficial for business and for our communities. You know, all you have to do is open the door and bring us to the table. And we want to hear a response that's supportive of that.
Thank you. So I just want to reiterate to our listeners that we're talking about BIDs, Business Improvement Districts, and the struggle against it. And I was just hoping that you can talk about, in your role at VOS, what does VOS want to contribute to a proposed compassionate care district? What will VOS's role be in a rollout?
I think what we're most excited in this proposal is having peer-run programs. These are programs that the communities that we're serving are participating in. So in the proposal, there's a conversation about public bathrooms and providing more hygiene facilities in the central industrial, in the central east side. And that's a huge need for us. We're located out on the bridge for I-84. There's no bathrooms there. VOS has the only bathroom where the community comes to use the bathroom. And we would like to see more resources and more facilities that are run by peers, and they understand that they have access to those resources. I think we're excited about the accountability piece in considering what bids are and what the proposal is out to the city right now. There's no way for us to measure the impact and to make sure that they're being accountable to the community. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're hiring a private security company is a big concern for us, because we don't know how to hold that company accountable. So I think this is an opportunity for us to engage in, what does it mean to have accountable safety? What does that look like? And just in general, the democratic process, you know, like making sure that the voices that are at the table are those of the community, you know, hearing from folks in the community that they haven't heard about this proposal is a big deal, you know, and providing opportunities for people to engage in that conversation is really important to make sure that those voices are valued. I think that's where we see ourselves plugging in and providing resources for people to engage in that way.
Thank you. And I just want to tell you that the reason that I wanted to bring it in is because I think VOS Day Labor Center is so important to this conversation and to the neighborhood, really. It's one of the ways that people who would otherwise absolutely be racially targeted and probably experience some discrimination by employers or would-be employers, VOS, which is a staple in the community, provides some support so that kind of exploitation that they would otherwise have to endure is mitigated.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to bring that in. I want people to know about what VOS does.
Of course. And I can share a little bit more for the listeners who don't know. The history of VOS is that the organization was created to create a space where informal workers, temporary workers, what are commonly called day laborers, individuals who gather on the street to find work, would be able to organize in a place where that they would feel safe, mm-hmm. and they would feel like they can advocate for their own dignity. And the organization basically works to advocate for workers' rights, advocating for fair work and fair pay. The day laborers are the ones who make the decisions about how the worker center is run. We are worker-led, and that's our mission. Fabulous. So they decide the minimum wage that they would like to get paid and mm-hmm. the conditions that they would like to be paid under. We have set a $15 minimum wage at the worker center for just basic work, and the rate changes depending on how hard the work is. But this is just a way for us to guarantee that these individuals are able to advocate and be self-determined and say—
Collectively,
yes. Exactly. And I think that's a framework that is emblematic of what it means to be people-led, people-powered. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that VOS's history in the Central East Side is as you have said, like emblematic of how things need to work, and you know, in a city that's touting equity, city that's touting mm-hmm. decriminalizing homelessness or decriminalizing people of color, mm-hmm. you know, I think this is the right step, you know, in talking about compassion and opening up our doors so that more people are involved.
It's a big opportunity to walk the walk. We'll see what happens.
You said it.
So some other organizations that were named that I want to bring up is Sisters of the Road, Right to Survive, Street Roots, and then RAP. Western Regional Advocacy Project. So if you could please name these organizations, and I can spit them back to you if you need, and how they all play into rap and what rap does in the community, and then we'll go into the campaign itself.
Sure. So as a member of RAP,
Western Regional Advocacy Project.
Yes, WRAP.
Thank you.
So RAP is a coalition research group founded by different organizations in the homeless community that are ideally led by the homeless community itself, or have a very big influence in how these things operate. So it's based in San Francisco, but it includes organizations all along the West Coast from California, Oregon, and Colorado. And it's been around about 15 years, and its director is this guy named Paul Bowden, who is pretty vehemently...
Shout out, Paul!
So the point of RAP is to research systemic reasons to why homelessness exists and what we can do about it, how we can move forward. And so after doing a massive survey throughout multiple states as to what are the priorities in the houseless community as to what needs to be addressed, they discovered that things like hygiene access, things like being able to sleep outdoors without being harassed, all led to the creation of the Homeless Bill of Rights, which is a campaign that's been running for about 5 years now. It's a legislative bill that we ran in all three states in order to...
What are those three states?
It's Colorado, California, and Oregon.
Thank you.
Yeah. But while doing this work, doing this research, we started to find that there are groups that tend to show up at legislative meetings and advocate and lobby very strongly against being able to sleep outdoors and being able to not be criminalized for being poor. And we realized that these groups all sort of coordinate together in their business improvement districts, namely. And so we decided to take a year off and, well, where these groups come from, what are they doing, and all that. And so we partnered with Berkeley in California, and we developed a report that came out in October of last year called Homeless Exclusion Districts, that details how the BIDs in California have been utilizing public dollars, public assessment fees, in order to lobby against the public's interest, specifically in the creation of anti-homeless ordinances like sit-lie laws, camping bans, things like that. That's what RAP does.
Okay. And now locally...
And they make great art. Amazing art. Yeah.
I have some on my laptop. The house keys, not handcuffs. The locked out, gentrified, criminalized. I agree. Beautiful artwork. Shout out to all of your artists. Yeah. So
the three local members,
yes,
here in Portland
are...
is Street Roots, Sisters of the Road Cafe, which I work in the cafe.
And thank you. The food is delicious.
Yeah, so good. It's about giving people dignity with their food and not just a handout.
Sure.
And Right to Survive, which has a very long history of advocating for and with the houseless community.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I didn't mean to have an Elvis moment there. Okay. So I wanted to just give some background so that people know who the players are. And I just want to know from the three of y'all, do you feel like we covered enough the background, the history, and the significance of BIDs and the fight against them? Should we go on?
There's definitely more.
There's a lot to say about them, and we're not going to cover it all in this hour. I mean, but I think the main thing is that... people have touched on the surveillance. It's often a big part of it. The private policing, which no one really knows how that's supposed to be held accountable.
The market.
The gentrification, the way that it's part of a bigger gentrification project. Mm-hmm. The other thing I kind of wanted to point out was that, BIDs have a tendency to... kind of pit neighborhoods against each other. Okay. Because what happens is that you create this inequitable system in which those who live and work in affluent neighborhoods have access to better services. Okay. So it creates this really uneven playing field in cities, so that certain neighborhoods have great street cleaning, other neighborhoods don't have great street cleaning or trash pickup or whatever. So you get these cities that are divided up into these kind of micro spaces, and there's this kind of competition. So I think that's also one really negative thing about them is that they tend to, you know, create this divided up city instead of a larger cooperation. Yeah, I mean, that was one thing I thought of that, I don't know.
That's important. Can you think of
any? Yeah.
It reminds me of like the global race to the bottom.
It is kind of like that, you know? I mean, it is. I think that's a really good way of putting it, actually. I think it doesn't sound appealing when I say that, does it? Like, is that a city that you want to live in? Like, I don't know.
It depends on whether or not you're struggling to survive or you're a yuppie.
Well, I think, you know, I would suspect that there are even a lot of people who are progressive who are fine, like not struggling necessarily economically, who also don't like that idea of a city. I mean, I know people like that. You know, I don't think it's just, I mean, I think it relates to even just the neighborhood level of experience in the city. I mean, I feel like BIDs kind of want to turn neighborhoods into like a Disneyland version of
what a city is,
you know? And I think that it erases all the kind of,
culture.
I have some really good notes on this. Yeah, I mean, the culture, I think the emphasis of BIDs is cleanliness and customer satisfaction.
Oh, dear.
You know, it's kind of this corporatization of cities.
Like Disney World.
Yeah, rather than valuing kind of a more complex, unpredictable, economically diverse, racially and socially diverse, and historically, I think, layered kind of experience of a city, it's more about making everything the same and keeping certain people out. And at least that's when you look at BIDs and you look at their history, that's the reality. I wish I could say there was an example of a BID that wasn't part of that larger, you know, that didn't have that effect, but I can't say there is. And I've asked a lot of people before I came on the air today, people who are like experts on this topic, you know, like, do you know of any example of a BID anywhere that's ever, can even be described as a little bit progressive? And the answer was no, not at all. So I was going to say that if this effort goes forward, like if the Compassionate Change District gets implemented and it actually becomes a reality, I think that Portland will be a real leader among cities in implementing something that's never been done before.
Okay.
So I think it's really a great opportunity for the leaders of the city, the mayor and other people who have power around this issue. It's a great opportunity for them to lead and show other cities how this can be done.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So thank you for bringing up BIDs in Portland, or the specter of a BID in Portland. Of course, we already have one in Northwest. And I was actually hoping that we could talk about the history of BIDs in Portland and what it's been like on the legislative side, and then what have the lived experiences looked like once implemented. So,
sure. We currently have two BIDs in Portland. One is known as Clean and Safe, and that's downtown. They're hard to miss. You'll see the Clean and Safe ambassadors sweeping up and walking around with guns. And just to point out, there's two sides to Clean and Safe. There's the side where people who have lived experience with homelessness are hired to clean up campsites of those who are currently homeless and to move them along. And then there's also the enforcement side, the safety side, right? Where Portland Patrol has been contracted to basically walk around with guns and handcuffs and detain people, move them along, and harass them out of public spaces. And those two components make up Clean and Safe together. I think what's important, though, is to know that Clean and Safe is in part very much controlled by the Portland Business Alliance. And they have a very long history in the city.
Of social justice.
Oh, yeah, social justice. Of being pro-environment, and they love poor people. They love them. And the other bid is Go Lloyd. And they're a little bit newer. They're a lot newer. They came around in the 2000s, and they are centered around the Lloyd District, of course. Mm-hmm. And so what we're dealing with today is the proposal of a third one, which is called, or was formerly called Eastworks, but is now called Central East Side. And that's being formed by the Central East Side Industrial District, which oversees roughly an 80-block radius over here from Burnside to Powell, from 1st to 12th. And KBOO is right in the middle of it. And you know, this whole area is technically federally recognized as an industrial sanctuary, and they have a lot of assets that they want to protect. And for anybody that's ever been over here, they know there's a large houseless population. And that's a problem for property owners who don't want to see their real estate depreciate, right? And so they have made this proposal of a pilot program for $2.6 million to be allotted towards, 48% of it goes towards the security program. The rest goes towards graffiti abatement. A small bit of it goes towards what they call an innovation fund. And the rest is basically lobbying expenses. And
why would they need to lobby?
Well, from what I've noticed, and I'm sure Allison knows this too, is that bids have a long history in utilizing these public fees in order to go around and lobby at the state and city level in order to create anti-homeless ordinances. And in fact, it's very, very likely that the rise of these anti-homeless ordinances over the last 10 years come directly from the sharing of these ordinances amongst the bids, because they seem to be pretty cookie cutter. they almost act like an American Legislative Exchange Council on a city level in the way that these ordinances are shared. And they propagate and lobby very, very intensely about how people need to be displaced. And, you know, it used to be just brown poor people, but now it's just poor people in general.
Okay. So I want you to come in. And I just want to lay it out again to make it plain. Developers are readily chipping in to a fund in order to have the whether it's a business improvement district or not, but particularly through a business improvement district, and are using a good lump of the money that's collected to do lobbying to give to representatives that then turn around and champion anti-homeless legislation. So I want to bring that
really
out.
It's really proper. Usually, it's property owners, yeah. And those property owners are often also developers. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. No. That was just the one thing I was going to jump in. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think what I wanted to share and add is that as Clean and Safe has been running, there's been a lot of touting of its successes. Oh, we collected 80 tons of trash, and you know, but I think on the ground what we're seeing is that there's more and more houseless folks who are in need of services, and that's not we're not seeing the city address that, you know. So we see an increase in needles on the streets, we see more trash, we see as the bids are accelerating, we see more acceleration in houselessness, or we see more acceleration in folks who are out in the streets. We don't see the balance on the actual inaction, the implementation of the business district, and the resolution of the issue of houselessness. So we're still in crisis, and the issue hasn't really been resolved.
I'm really glad you said that, because I feel like what you're saying is something that is sort of an elephant in the room, which is that homelessness has actually been kind of produced by the very situation that we now have in cities, where there are bids and rents are so high and there's gentrification and everything is catering to a consumer class of people. There's a reason that all this homelessness, the rise in homelessness, which I think you guys know better than I do, but it's there are more homeless people now than there ever have been or have been in a long time. That has coincided with these huge building booms, and that is not an accident. Those two things are related. So I think that what you guys are asking of this, you know, Central East Side group is kind of the least that they can do to kind of deal with a situation that they have a hand, I think, not necessarily those individuals in particular, but the whole situation that they have a hand in creating the situation. And so, you know what I mean? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So thank you for bringing up one of the slogans of the show. So in addition to me being a friendly neighborhood agitator, is the struggle addressing all elephants in all rooms. It's very important. So if there's something blaring that we all know is there, but we're not talking about it, oh, we're going to talk about it on The Struggle. Okay. So when you bring up homelessness is actually produced by gentrification, I want to pull this out, and then I'll throw it back at you. The process of gentrification does not begin with, you know, some coffee shop or some cupcake place or some realty. No. It's a decades-long process that first starts with disinvestment. It's very important that you disinvest, that you draw a red line. We want to talk about redlining. You're free around an area and say, within this area, there will not be investments made. You will not be able to get a home or a business loan in this area. We want this area to degrade over time. Part of that degradation will be a tolerance, an allowance for people who are houseless to be able to stay there, for people to be allowed to buy and sell drugs, to be able to be allowed to buy and sell sex, to be allowed for the street sweepers to not come and do their jobs, any number of things that will make a neighborhood look bad and ugly and will not facilitate investments. This point of gentrification is very important to always bring out, because it is in this period that things get to a point where different kinds of cultures end up coming to be. When people who don't have the means get together, they do get creative. We get very creative, and we'll figure out how to take care of each other. Thank God, because we're being abandoned by people whose job it is to make the society that we live in run and function, and they decide not to do it for some length of time. Then, once that property value is good and low, developers can come in, they put out an RFP, a request for a proposal. They say, hey, we got this whole block, and it's on the chopping block, and you can have it for the reduced low price of whatever it is. Sign your name on the dotted line, and then you can do whatever you want to do. Now, the price is low enough for somebody that has the financial means to go ahead and buy it all and transform it into something else. Now, the people who are there, where are they going to go? They're going to go wherever the police tell them to go, and there's not going to be a lot of hubbub about it, because we all know, and this is the elephant, is that, hey, by and large, homeless people don't have lobby groups. You can't get your pennies together and go lobby Congress to write legislation that will help you to survive. But the people who've just come to the neighborhood, that have been chomping at the bit, waiting for the neighborhood to degrade enough to the point that they can come in and buy it all up, now they're telling you to get your stuff up and get out. And they don't really care about where you go next. So thank you very much for bringing that up. This is not a natural process. It is absolutely manufactured, and it must be struggled against. Okay.
Yes.
Amen.
Great. Okay. So what is being done now that people need to know about? You are the cavalry. My guests are pointing at one another and putting their generous hands out to say, no, you go first. No, you go first. No, you go first. No, you go first. Who's on first?
So as we mentioned earlier, we developed a counter narrative, a counter proposal to this new... and I guess I should point out, they don't call them BIDs, Business Improvement Districts in Portland. They call them Enhanced Service Districts as of like 2011. They decided the branding of it was too, like enhanced too much.
Enhanced interrogation techniques.
Yes.
That kind of enhancement.
And it should also be pointed out the across the country, business improvement districts is the general vernacular, but they go by a whole variety of different names. They go by business alliances and downtown square
partnerships. Yeah.
Partnerships, like all, a whole variety of things, but they all seem to constitute the same legal framework around collecting property assessment fees that pull into city budgets that then are allotted to them at some point.
Yes.
So that is the main characteristic, I think, that, that helps identify them.
And they do you want to say anything about the fact that they can be nonprofits? Or I'm not sure how often they actually are nonprofits, but they often are.
Yeah.
And that allows them to collect donations from whoever wants to give them money.
Okay.
And at least in New York, when I tried
to... For a worthy cause.
Right. Well, at least in New York, when I tried to research this, I actually foiled, sent out a Freedom of Information request to find out, to the state attorney general, to find out, like, who are the donors who are giving money to this one particular bid. And they wrote back and basically said, that is not public information. You're not allowed to know who is actually giving money to this entity. So we had no way of knowing, like... You know, if we had had a list of, it's this 10 developers are giving 80% of the money, that tells you a lot, right, about how their agenda is going to be influenced, but we had no way of knowing that. So there's a lot of lacking of transparency when it comes to these entities. There's a real problem with that. And I don't know how the one in Portland is going to be run with regard to that kind of transparency, but... Or how generally Portland does that, but...
It's a bit weird because Portland sets up sort of a shell system, right? So like the Portland Development Commission created the Portland Business Alliance, which then created Clean and Safe, and they're all different distinct legal entities that feed down to one another. So with this, the Central East Side is a 501c6, which is a business nonprofit for businesses, which is kind of funny. And then they're creating a 501c3 formerly known as Eastworks, but it's now known as Central East Side. So that, while they're distinct legal entities, they obviously will be sharing and pulling money together. So it's intentionally complicated. Like, they intentionally do this as to throw off anybody that might be sniffing around.
Yeah, sure, because then you don't know who to hold accountable. Who to protest against, who to sue.
Right. And I think what's important about the report that came out from Berkeley and with the Western Regional Advocacy Project is it really helps lay out, and this is a homeless exclusion district, really helps lay out how these entities have formed legally and what it is that they're seeking and what they have done historically. And it's one of the first reports of its kind. The only other major one that I can think of
Please
personally.
Say the name of the report and where people can find it.
Homeless Exclusion Districts. If you go to RAP Home, so WRAPHOME.org, you'll see amongst all the good artwork is the Homeless Exclusion District report. The only other major report that I can think of, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Allison, is the Seattle University report on how bids are taking over public space and privatizing them and pushing houseless people into the arms of the police. So back to your question. Your question was, what are we doing? What are we going to do? What can we do?
Such good active listening skills.
And I really feel like Sandra would be a much better voice to this, but...
Sure.
Yeah, what is the CCD proposing?
Right. So I would say that the CCD is proposing a cleanup program that's focused on addressing issues that our communities face in regards to unequal access to water, sewer, and garbage services. So in the proposal, there's a proposal to engage with the homeless community and other communities that may be affected with this to create peer-run programs that are waste collection services, and creating mechanisms for that. And it also includes a safety program that is centering the right to safe sleep and safe parking, and it's trauma-informed. I think the biggest concern that we've had with including a private security company, even though that there's claims that this company has received trauma-informed care and trauma-informed training, we're not seeing that happening on the ground.
It's a joke.
And
And we need to involve our communities in determining what that looks like, right? So providing those resources so that the communities that we serve have those services and they have the right to safe sleep and the right to safe parking is really important in our city. It also has a jobs development program where we're using peer-run systems to support the functioning of the hygiene and safety components. And the goal is to have it be transparently run. I think Allison was talking about how do we determine the transparency of the ESD. Having a democratic governing board where there's members who are engaged that represent these communities is extremely important. Representing the stakeholders in the Central East Side and having annual independent audits so that people know exactly what's going on, what are the results, you know, and not just touting numbers for the sake of putting them out there. Yes. And the proposal is actually a fraction of the cost that the ESD is being proposed. So savings and benefits for everybody involved. I think that it's a win-win for everybody involved.
Thank you. Please say more about the, laryngitis, I'm sorry. Please say more about the peer-run, self-managed aspect because it's so important that this is not a service model of old, like with the church or something like that, yeah. Where it's people who are housed, people who are not experiencing poverty, mm-hmm. Doling out charity. That's not what this is.
We call that tokenizing.
Thank
right?
you, please.
So I think what you're referring to is a peer-based model, you know, which is saying that these entities that have funding and capacity come in and they say, we're going to help you, we're going to save you, right? And we're going to give you these resources. And sometimes, although that's interesting and might help in the short term, I think in the long term, we have to think about how can our communities help themselves and create solutions on their own. Yes. And creating these peer-run models puts the power in their hands and it provides an opportunity to delegate that power for individuals to determine how we want our programs to run. You know, I think that there's opportunities to train and educate folks so that we can create a pipeline for individuals who are out on the streets to work and build their skills so that they are able to train others, yeah. You know, and in that way we're empowering from the ground up instead of the power coming from the top to the bottom.
And not for nothing, oh my God, I sound like my grandmother every time I say not for nothing, anyway, because it literally means nothing when you start a sentence by saying not for nothing. Anyway, if nothing else, what a program like this, I'm thinking about Right to Dream 2. Right, shout out to Right to Dream 2 and everybody that's there. If nothing else, it gives you a safe place to go to sleep, wake up rested, and do what you need to do for your life. Which seems like not a, maybe to some it seems like not a big deal, but it makes a world of difference. How many of our friends miss their appointments, lose jobs, don't get things in the mail, don't get calls, can't function because they just don't have an address. Mm. They don't have a place that they know that they're going to be able to sleep. I want to land on that and just to give people some grounding about how important just that one aspect is.
And imagine that's the impact of what sweeps have in our communities, right?
You
have,
say what a sweep is?
So a sweep, as Benjamin was explaining, and what's happening in some parts of Portland is that you have an organization like Central City Concern or the police will come in the middle of the night or at any given time into a homeless encampment and they will collect everything that's on the sidewalk or everything that's in a given area. Sometimes there's warning, sometimes there isn't, sometimes the warning is delayed, sometimes it doesn't happen on time. So everybody's on edge, you know. So first of all, you have folks who are dealing with trauma on a day-to-day basis, regardless. And then there's this added layer of, I don't know if I'm going to get swept today, so I have to carry my valuables with me everywhere I go. And if you miss something, so if you forget your ID, if you get your personal effects, if you forget something that keeps you safe and makes you feel comfortable, you've built yourself a home, a place where you can come to, and you come back and that place is gone, what's going to happen the next day? So, we see individuals who come to the worker center and they haven't had, you know, a shower, they don't have a bathroom to go to facilities, and we just have a porta potty, right? So if we had a place where people could take showers, you know, they could wake up feeling safe, they could go to bed feeling safe and not feel like their livelihoods would be threatened the next day, I think that would make, like you said, a world of difference. And it's real, you know, somebody waking up in the morning and knowing, I have my ID to go cash my check, you know, or, you know, I have my bus pass if I need to go to work. Yeah. I think that is a way of saving somebody's life, yeah. And it shouldn't be discounted.
Thank you. Okay, looking forward, what will happen next?
Well, we had a meeting with the mayor yesterday gave a very brief proposal. The Central East Side was also there.
Who decided that it would be brief?
Well, it kind of kept getting interrupted by the Central East Side, but I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. Anyways, it happened. So we were trying to determine if they were going to delay their vote because they're going to City Council on the 30th of this month, January 30th. They'll be at City Council most likely.
So will we.
And so will we. Okay. And so will you, listener.
Oh, you're breaking the fourth wall.
And so it got a little weird because the mayor is advocating and trying to apply pressure to make this happen, right? He wants to see it happen. As far as I know, he wants to see it happen. And so where am I going with this?
What is going to happen?
They're going to council on the 30th, and okay. They're going to vote it in, right? They're going to vote in the legal structure of it. And City Council is going to say yes or no. Obviously, we want to see the best thing possible for the houseless community that is going to be affected and people in the area. So as of now, we would really like for the vote to be delayed until a very palatable proposal is pushed forth, ideally along the lines of the Compassionate Change District and not the punitive response of the Enhanced Service District, yes. Which is about more police, more yes. private security, more graffiti abatement, although graffiti and art is what makes up the Central East Side, makes people want to come here. But
I know, that revolting building by the Burnside Bridge.
Well.
Okay.
That's not graffiti, although it is. That's what they want. No. Well, I like the idea of difference and abstraction brought into spaces, but
it's the wrong kind of abstraction. That's postmodern abstraction. It's not helpful.
So what people can do is come to council on the 30th, but more importantly, go to our website at ccdpdx.org
okay.
and sign the petition will go out to the mayor, to city council members, telling them that you support the Compassionate Change District. But more, I guess, also review it. Review what you're sending, right? Review the proposal. See if it's palatable.
It's easy to read. It's not too long.
No, not at all. Easy to read. And come be a part of the process.
Yeah, reach out to your commissioners. If you have Twitter, you can at them and ask them what they're doing to create a Compassionate Change District. Learn more. I think going online and reading about it, as Benjamin said, is really important, but also showing up on the 30th. The more bodies we have in the room that are asking for accountability, the more that our stronger our voices are.
So when our listeners come on the 30th, what should they expect when they, you know, walk up to City Hall? Then what?
I mean, it's a public hearing, right?
People can
presumably, depending on how many people they allow in, can say something.
There will be a public testimony period. So please, if you want to speak on your experiences or about this in general, sign up. Please sign up. The more people that speak, the better.
So what does it look like in terms of decision makers? Where does it seem like they're at? What's the likelihood?
Besides the mayor, although maybe also the mayor, it seems like a lot of the commissioners would really like to see this delayed. I mean, this is really fast
yes.
for such a big project.
Yes.
And there's a lot of concerns about the community pushing back on it, as they should.
As they should.
And so they would really like to see a middle ground reach between the Compassionate Change District and the ESD and forming something that is truly new, innovative, collaborative, and actually helps the situation. Because as we know, displacement of the houseless community just results in a long term, more people stuck in a cycle of poverty, more incarceration.
So in terms of public messaging, how can people demonstrate their support in addition to showing up on the 30th? What else can people do to support?
Visit CCUDPDX and share your comments and share your support for the Compassionate Change District.
Okay.
You're listening to KBOO in Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio dial. KBOO's programming is made possible by KBOO members, listeners, and support from Hopworks Urban Brewery, offering sustainable brews and local foods for 10 years. Serving the community at three locations, Hopworks Urban Brewery on Southeast Powell Boulevard, Bike Bar on North Williams Avenue, and in Vancouver on Southeast Mill Plain Boulevard. More information online at hopworksbeer.com. You're listening to KBOO in Portland, 90.7 on your radio dial.
The World Arts Foundation and KBOO would like to invite you to the 34th anniversary and tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., entitled We've Come This Far, Keep Alive the Dreams. On Monday, January 21st, 2019, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason Street. There'll be a host of civic leaders, choirs, the Jefferson Dancers, and of course, our own Victory Village Marketplace. Again, keep alive the dream. Monday, January 21st from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason, presented by the World Arts Foundation and broadcast live by KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO